It's the 7th of May, and only two more weeks. Oh, my goodness. And when's the final? The Thursday of the week of finals. We'll discuss it, or announce it for the next three sessions after this session. That's it. Three more sessions after this. But it's not the same time. It's a little later, right? 10:40 or something. But don't worry, I'll be here. I'll make sure I'm here early. And you can stay as long as you want, as long as there's room. We'll find some other place. But we'll discuss the final in more detail as we go along. But just if you're not going to be here, contact me so we can make other arrangements. Because after that, the next day is graduation. I got to turn in the grades. We haven't told, I think, the next Tuesday or Wednesday or something like that. But just contact me, okay? Contact me. Okay, we're going to do real estate and other investment alternatives because not everyone just wants to own mutual funds. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Nobody? We did the Microsoft joke in the morning. Want to hear the Microsoft joke? It's not a great joke. It's not a bad joke. Hey, so this woman was married three times before, and she wanted children. So she meets a guy, and they get married. And they're very happy. There's Marco. So, what's going on over here? So it's her honeymoon, wedding night. And she says to him, I know you have to believe me. I'm still a virgin. And he says, you don't have to play this game with me. I know you were married three times before. And she says, no, you have to believe me, or I'm leaving right now. And he said, okay, well, what happened to the first husband, right? And she says, well, the first husband had a medical problem. And I wanted children, so that's why I divorced him. And he says, oh, can you pass these two back to them? He says, what about the second husband? What about the second husband? Well, the second husband was homosexual. He wasn't interested in me. And I wanted children, so that's why I divorced him. And the guy says, oh, so sorry to hear that. Well, what happened to the third husband? She said, oh, the third husband was Bill Gates. And he said, so? He said, well, you know, every night in the bed, he would just sit and tell me how good it was going to be. And the guy goes, well, I guess that makes sense. What would you expect from a guy who names his company Microsoft? Oh. What? You weren't there. There's other Microsoft jokes, but I think that's one of the better ones. Okay, anyway, got your Baffle of Brokers? Any questions about finance at all? If you need an extra one, here's an extra one, because we're going to do that next week. But let us now get started on real estate and other investment alternatives. If anybody actually still has the book, or anyone bought the book, what they did is they took this chapter out when they went from a big fat book that cost a whole lot to a real skinny book that still cost a whole lot, and which is unfortunate. Because there are investment alternatives other than just mutual funds. And the biggest one being real estate. Real estate is often said to be the biggest creator of millionaires in the United States of our media. And whether or not that's true or not, maybe it is, especially if you live in Southern California, bought a house, you're pretty darn wealthy. But it's not without its problems, folks. It's not without its risks. And so let's take a look at some of them. When people ask me, well, what about real estate? I say, stocks and mutual funds, which, you know, that's my bailiwick. I say, well, you're going to own a home, hopefully. You're going to buy a house. So that is some real estate investment. And the IRS calls it your principal residence. And there's some tax. How did you get this cake? Good. Okay. Did you get the? Okay, I'll give it to you on Thursday. Okay, it's online. The stock options, and we did stock options and futures contracts today. So it's online, and I'll give you a copy on Thursday. That's for one. Okay. All right. Oh, I don't. Okay. So. It has great tax advantages, as we saw back in Chapter 3. It's a pretty good hedge, meaning a bet against inflation, because a home nationwide produces about an after-inflation return of about 2.5%, which is about what bonds do. But in some cases, like San Diego, it's done a hell of a lot better than that. But in my humble opinion, as we said way back in Chapter 7, it's a home first and investment second. Now, you may be tempted to buy a vacation home. There are tax advantages to that. But the big real estate choice are rental properties. And we'll spend some time on that. But that's a whole course unto itself. Unfortunately, when we teach real estate, don't tell the real estate professors, we teach a lot, and it's not their fault. That's what the Department of Real Estate wants you, them to teach you if you're going to become an agent. They teach you stuff that's just not useful at all. But you got to learn it to take the darn exam so to be an agent. But the real way to learn about rental property is to buy it. But oh boy, is it an expensive lesson. Or, in my humble opinion, get a job in the industry. Work as a property manager or escrow agent or whatever. Get in the industry somehow. Maybe a real estate agent. It's hard. It's not as easy as it sounds to people. Oh, I make tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah, right, you do. So we'll discuss rental properties, but it's really, it's like trying to explain to somebody how to drive and they don't get behind the wheel of a car. Because and crash. Now, the biggest gains come from undeveloped land, and then either it's waiting for it to become very popular, profitable, or developing it. But this is the most riskiest. This is not something you should do first, or second, or third. Be in the industry before you get involved in investing in dirt. Although, this is where you can make tons of money. If you can develop a lot into housing or commercial, better yet, we're talking unbelievable amounts of money here in San Diego, but there's no guarantee you're going to be able to develop the land. So you go out there, out to Jacumba. You ever see Jacumba? You know where Jacumba is? Boulevard? You ever been to El Centro? It's sort of out there, but it ain't that far. You get 2/3 of the way there, and you're in a come before you come down into the desert. And you see this land for sale. In fact, it may even be going through foreclosure, a tax lien. Somebody didn't pay the taxes, the property taxes. And you say, wow, it's 20 acres. It's got to be worth a ton of money. I'm going to buy it. Okay. You pay the taxes. You bought it. Now what do you do with it? You got to pay the taxes every year. Are you going to be able to develop it? No, maybe, maybe not. Why would you develop it? Nobody's going to live there. What do you think property here in San Diego is going to cost you? A
lot more.
Yeah, a whole lot more. Millions. It's unbelievable what these things are paying for. It's unbelievable. So stay away from undeveloped land. Now, those are direct investments. Your name is on the property. Your name is down at the county admin building. But you can get involved in real estate in a way that the same way you can get involved in stocks through mutual funds. We don't call them mutual funds. We call them syndicates or limited partnerships. But the easiest way are through what are called real estate investment trusts. Now, these things look like stocks. So if you've taken business, what we've done here, and then if you take business 123, you'll say, oh, these things are pretty straightforward to understand. They're different, though. They're not corporations. They're trusts. So a little tricky. But when you see Home Depot or Walmart or these shopping centers or warehouses or apartment complexes, those they're not owned by the Walmarts, the Home Depots, the Bonds. They're not owned by Bonds. Some of them are. Sears owns a lot of their own properties. But they are owned by the Real Estate Investment Trust. And their job, that's their business, is to keep the real estate maintained, collect the rent, make sure that there's tenants, and then they turn around and send the rental profits to you. So it's kind of like a mutual fund, but instead of owning stocks or bonds, they own real estate. Sound cool? Do you want to take a look at one? There's one based here in San Diego called Realty Corporation, and they have a very strange very strange. Here it is. Where is it? What happened to Yahoo? What happened to Yahoo? I guess I got rid of it. Let's go to Yahoo. Oh, by the way, did you hear Pinchy Trump has decided he's not going to play nice with the Chinese. What? Dog market tank, yeah. Big jerk. And I like the way he says, oh, the Chinese are paying so much more with these tariffs. No, the Chinese don't pay them. We pay them. The United Staters pay them. So this one, I know the symbol. It's O. It's weird. Realty Income Corporation. So look, it looks like a stock. It looks like a stock. It has a stock price. It's down 3.5% today. Market cap, $20.5 billion. P.E. ratio, really high. That's too high for realty, for REITs. And it pays almost 4%, which is pretty cool, right? I like it when they pay 7. In the past, they used to pay 7, 6, 7, 8%. Yes? Well, you need a brokerage account. You need a brokerage account, and the young folks like... I'm sorry? Say that again? Verified? Well, they're going to ask for your Social Security number. They're going to ask for a proper identification. They're going to do a background check. Not a background check. They check this database to make sure you're not some kind of terrorist or something, whatever. But yeah, you have to give them your Social Security number. You have to be, if you're not a citizen, then you have to fill out another form. You don't have to be a citizen to buy stocks in the United States, but you have to fill out another form to show that, you know, you're who you are, say you are. But yeah, you can buy these guys right here. I wouldn't buy them now. One of my best, personally, was a REIT. They're gone now. They got bought by somebody else. But when we bought it, it was paying around 10%. It was based here in San Diego. So it looks like a stock. But is it a corporation? Is it making widgets or phones? No, it's handling real estate. Is that cool? Would you be interested in that? You don't have to be a landlord. Yeah.
How do you gain money by, like, just appreciation? Like, how do you gain, like, money off the...
Well, whatever money they make, most of them are just in the business of collecting the rent, making sure the properties are managed well, make sure there's tenants. But some of them are in the business of developing real estate. They're more risky, and they're far and fewer between. They're more risky, but yeah, they often have good capital appreciation. But these, like Kimco, Simon Properties, they own malls and warehouses and apartment complexes and strip malls, shopping centers and the like. And so they're making money off the rent. It's a way to be a landlord without being a landlord if you're into real estate. And we saw in Chapter 13 that there are some mutual funds that invest in the REITs. The problem with that is we like to buy a mutual fund for diversification. There's just not that many REITs out there. There's just not that many real estate investment trusts. So I'd rather buy the real estate investment trust that I liked. Okay, where is this guy? Back. Okay. Now, equity sharing. Do you remember we talked about equity sharing, a way to get into a property as the young adults, the young single person or married couple? Go to the grandparents, the parents. You have $50,000 to invest. They put the down payment in. And then you, the younger folks, live in there, make the payments, and you share in the equity. Well, you could be the investor. It doesn't have to be a familial relationship. You can be the investor who puts the $40,000 or whatever, $50,000, for them to buy the house. Your name's on the title. Make sure you get a good real estate lawyer to write it all up. But that's very cool, especially here in San Diego. It's done very well. Low-income housing is a way for those people who have, you know, pretty high income to get a tax credit, a tax deduction. Most of us are not going to do that. Now, would you invest in commercial property? Would you? Oh, yeah. Oh, boy, if you could. You would love to invest in commercial property, especially here in San Diego, but forget it. Forget it. It's insanely expensive. I'm looking at commercial property in Tijuana, personally, and I don't think I'm going to do it. But, think about it. In 1999, that was 20 years ago, you could buy a downtown San Diego storefront for about $1 million, $1.5 million. 7, 8 years later, they were selling for $8 or $9 million. So you think housing, residential properties went up? There's, I don't know if you've been to Ocean Beach, but if you have, on Newport is a international hostel. Have you seen that? You have to have a passport outside the United States to stay there. And it was a hotel before that. And my buddy, the more risky guy, was trying to get a group of us to go out to go buy it. I forget the numbers. It was like 440,000 or 470, whatever it was. This was 20 years ago. And it needed a few $100,000 worth of repairs just to bring it up to code. And so I'm thinking, I don't know, this is a pretty big deal. I don't know if I want to do that. 8 years later, it sold for $3.4 million. So, okay, so if you're so inclined, I would start with duplexes, small apartment buildings, but hotels, office buildings, stores, get in the industry, and maybe you'll get in a company that does this. We like to see the price equal to 7-10 times rent. What does that mean? If you, let's say you had to go out, and you might know this, maybe because I'm looking carefully, but if you had a 2-bedroom condo for rent, how much do you think you could get for rent in Chula Vista? So not the best place. $2,200? $2,400 maybe? $2,300? Okay, multiply that times 10. What is that? I'm sorry, that times 12. It's $2,300 per month. What is that per year? Like 26,000? I like to do 2,000, makes it easy. 27,600. Now, multiply that times 10. I can do that in my head. You're going to find a condo for $276,000, 2-bedroom, that you can rent out for $2,300 in San Diego? No. No, 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 no. So you're just not going to see this in San Diego. Maybe if you find a place that's really trashed and stuff, but it's just not going to happen. You're going to be looking at several years of negative cash flow, which means you're going to have to pay out more than the rent is coming in. Mortgage, insurance, property taxes, maintenance. So it's really tough here in San Diego to buy rental property. Plus, let's say this were $2,276,000. They want 25% down now. During the insanity of the housing, the housing bubble, they were taking for rental properties, they were taking 10-15%. But how much is 0.25% of that? They want you to have $69,000 down payment, plus add another $7,000 or $8,000 for closing costs. And that's for something you can't find. So, and we'll do some numbers. We'll do some numbers. I got this little spreadsheet I show my investment club. Okay. But if you leave San Diego, or if you're lucky enough to find a fixer-upper with 2 to 4 units, live in one. Is that cool? You know if they're having parties at 2 o'clock in the morning because you're right there. Look for low down payments and seller financing of rundown properties because banks usually do not want a loan to distressed properties. However, banks are all too happy to finance a rundown foreclosure on their books. Why? Because it ain't making them any money. If a rundown foreclosure is on their books, it means they're not getting their interest payments. They want to get rid of it. So if they can't sell it, then you go to them and say, hey, will you lend to me? Lend me the money, and I'll buy it from you. And they'll do that. But San Diego, no, because there are the best real estate investors in the world are right here in Southern California. And there are people who will swoop in and pay cash. They've got the $280,000 or the $350,000 in cash, so the bank doesn't have to worry about it. But if you move to somewhere else, Arizona or Nevada or somewhere back east or something like that, they're just going, no, thank you, no, no, no. This is why Tijuana is becoming so popular with the gringos. And the Mexicans are not happy about that. It's raising the prices in TJ. Okay. Stay away from property managers. In my humble opinion, why? Because they're going to take 10% of the rent. So subtract $230 from that just to have the property managers take care of the property, collect the rent, deal with the tenants. So I'm not a big fan, although there are exceptions. Now, most importantly, do you want to be a landlord? Well, are you savvy dealing with repairs and also dealing with renters? Because fixing a tenant is just as important as fixing a toilet. One bad tenant could set you back thousands of dollars. Figure is going to be at least $5,000 to $10,000. I can tell you a horror story at the point. It wasn't that bad, actually. He just punched a big hole in two of the inner doors. Now, these doors, this is showing how manly he was. He beat up his wife until he wound up in jail. These doors, the inner doors, they're usually cardboard. Have you noticed that? You could do it. Just punch your foot. Don't do it. Where you live, they might not be happy about it. But he just showed how manly he was. He punched a big hole through one door and then the other door. And he beat up his wife and wound up in jail. So one tenant can set you back thousands of dollars. That's why if you're the tenant and you show that you're taking good care of the place, your landlord should keep your rent increases to a minimum. So you think of it from that point of view. And then did I talk about Jay DeSima? I'm an idiot, folks. When it comes to fixing things, I'm an idiot anyway. But when it comes to fixing, back to the broker. Who's that? Back to the brokers. Questions. That's why we have Mario and Jason and Jose and my son is now helping. And whenever something goes wrong, I just have them do it. But I love reading about it. This guy is a genius. He buys and sells properties and rents them out. And he says, you want to increase the value of your rental property or your home, install a white picket fence. People love a white picket fence. Is that dumb or what? I think it's dumb. But that's what he says, and it works. And he's the guy who he had a house that was settling. You know, the foundation was sort of settling. It doesn't necessarily mean bad things happen, right? But the house starts to settle. And so what did he do when he replaced the windows and doors? He tilted them away from the settle so it looked up, straight up and down. That's nothing new. That's exactly what they did to the Leaning Tower of Pisa in Italy, the Italian engineers. They were building the thing and started leaning. So if you look at the top, you'll see that they tilted it the other way. Didn't work. Okay, what are the advantages? Well, there's the hedge against inflation that we said and financial leverage. What is that? That's why back in chapter 11, when I said that real estate only did about 7 or 8%, stocks did better, the real estate agents and the real estate people said, hey, you're not comparing apples to apples. Okay, I told you I'd get to there. We're going to get to there. It's the use of borrowed funds for investment purposes, which allows you to acquire a more expensive property than you could on your own. And we're going to do just a couple of calculations. They will not be on the final exam, so don't worry. There's easy entry and easy exit, usually with partnerships and REITs. And one of the cool things about real estate is that you cannot check your price of your real estate investment on the internet every day. Like, people will say, when they have stocks, oh, I'm in it for the long term. And then every 5 minutes, they're looking at their phone. Oh, it's gone down 25 cents. What do I do? Turn the phone off. But now you can. And people are hooked on Zillow, Trulia. We showed you these, right? And that's what they do. They watch the value of their property go up and down, and they get so excited. It's real estate. It's a long-term investment. Forget about it, will you? Just stay away from it. What's the disadvantage? The big bugaboo in real estate is liquidity. Liquidity with stocks, mutual funds, call up your broker, go online, boom, they're gone. How long does it take to sell a property? Typically 3-4 months when things are average. 6-9 months, a year or more when things are not good. But in the height of the bubble, you put up the for sale sign on Thursday. This is 2004, 5, 6. By Saturday, you got 5-6 offers, and Sunday you wrote the sales agreement. And that's what was going on. And now we had a little bit of that starting just a little while ago, about a year or so ago. There were sellers that just as soon as they put it on the market, boom. Is that happening now? Well, I'm listening to the real estate agents are saying it's taking longer and prices are a little soft. So liquidity is a problem. Not with REITs, because they're like a stock. You just sell them. And there's a lack of diversification. All your money's riding on one property. Unless you get a REIT or a syndicate. The syndicates have problems with passive tax shelters, but you're not going to get involved with these guys. And then the PETA factor. Remember the PETA factor for mutual funds? What's PETA stand for? Pain in the... For mutual funds, once you've chosen your mutual fund, there's nothing for you to do. Real estate? You want to squeeze them. You want to have their eyes pop out. You can't do that. You got to call a lawyer, have them evicted. It takes a couple months, costs $1,000 at the very least to get rid of them. Plus, I had one guy who's really sharp. He came in here to our investment club, and he had a not. I guess there weren't like ones we had. The guy beat up his wife and the other people who were just ugh. I don't want to talk about it. Dirty diapers just left on the floor. And they threw them on the plate. On the, they were up there on the second floor, and they threw them down on the house that's right next door. They were just throwing them on the roof. But he had one that was, you know, why would you do that? There's a trash can. It's a perfectly good trash can. Why do you have to throw them on the next? Maybe they were really drunk. They missed. Maybe they were trying to throw them down. He said, look. He went to the one renters. He said, look, this isn't working out. How about if I give you $1,000 and you leave? I'll give you an extra $1,000 just to leave. And it worked. They left. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then you'll hear people say, property never goes down in San Diego. Well, they're wrong. Come on, admit it, Payano. Real estate is the perfect example. Perfect investment. This is what people were saying in 2007, 8. No, not 8. Beware the permanent trend. Is that cute? You like that? Permanent trend? It's like jumbo shrimp, straight curve, President Trump. Two things that don't belong together. Real estate goes up and down in cycles. They didn't believe you when you said, look, real estate went down in San Diego back in 1990, 91, 92, 93. It went down about 20, 25%. That's what I thought was going to happen in 2004, 5, and 6. When my buddies go, hey, it's going to go down 50%. I said, Jim, no, 20, 25%. No, he was right. And those people who bought in 2006 and went through bankruptcy. It seems to be finally back on its feet, but now you hear people making rumbles about, ooh, there's another recession coming. Well, we know that. It's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. And when it does, the prices are going to soften. But, oh, well, are you in it for the long term? Everyone nod your head yes. Because if you're not in it for the long term, all I can say is I can't help you. Good luck. And there is no such thing as a perfect investment. Hopefully that's what you've gotten from the few chapters we've discussed. All investments have advantages. All investments have disadvantages. And so you have to keep your eyes open. But people don't. They just hear, ooh, 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 is it too late to get in? Oh, is it too late to get out? Okay. What about leverage, huh? What about the ability to make money with other people's money? Well, I already told you about that. Is that what makes real estate such a great investment? Well, yes. Yes, it is. It is can be very lucrative. Real estate can be very, very profitable, but it can also be a disaster. And this is how some people had to learn the hard way. Now, the old book has two problems. And they're on the other side of the sheet I gave you. So let's take a look at them. They're not, did I mention they're not going to be on the exam? They're not going to be on the exam. You have this? Who doesn't have it? Okay. One from Edgar, one from Francisco. Noah, do you have one? It's, I don't know. Is it raining outside? The handout for today? Yeah, okay, good. I don't know. The material will be on the exam, but the calculations, the stock calculations will be on the exam, but not the real estate calculations, okay? So these were in the old book, and the old book was written about 2003-4, and this is while this was happening. You know, real estate was going up 20% a year, which is not usual. 7%, 6%, 5%, about 2.5% more than the inflation rate. So what happened? They had two problems. I didn't change them. I stole them verbatim. So they just used Dave. You know me, I usually use funny names, but he didn't use a funny name, so I just said Dave. Okay, Dave. So number one, Dave bought a rental property. Now, again, this is not San Diego. $200,000 cash. Now, is that the way most people buy rental properties? No. These huge investors that swooped in and had, you know, they're called private equity firms. They had the cash. But no, most people, they don't come up with $200,000. But let's say he did. Now, if he sold the place 1 year later for $240,000, what was his return? There's two returns. There's the absolute dollar return, and then there's the percentage return. So what was the dollar return? Tough question. $40,000? Everybody get that? That's called the absolute dollar return. That's the money he made. But what was his percentage return? We take the $40,000 and we divide it by what he brought to the table. You hear people say that, what he brought to the table. So what did he bring to the table? Tough question. How much did he pay? $200,000. So do that calculation. What was his rate of return? Some of you did it in your head. It's 0.20 or 20%. Would you be happy with 20% in 1 year? What you don't understand is how you would not have come up with the $200,000. You just don't do that. Or at least you do. Now you need 25%. But at the time, they were letting people buy these things with 10% down. Maybe 15 if they were more reputable. So there's the answer to the first one. Right? It costs us $200,000 to make $40,000. Yes?
What if he hasn't paid off the house and say he sells it?
What if he hasn't paid off the house? Sure, he can sell. He paid cash. He cash. There's no bank involved. He paid cash. He sells it for $240,000. You know, there's some closing costs involved. But he gets, you know, he makes $40,000 on $200,000. Cool? Would you be happy with that? Well, that's what happens when we do what was allowed, you know, 14 years ago, 15 years ago. This time, he bought the same $200,000 house, but he only came up with 10% of the house price. He was able to put down $20,000, and he has a loan for $180,000. You see, because the bank lent him the $180,000. You with me? Nod your head yes or go no, Frank. Okay, so now it does the same thing. It goes up 20%. It goes up $40,000. He sells it for $240,000. So now he made $40,000. But how much did he bring to the table? The first time he paid it in cash. But this time he leveraged the property. He borrowed $180,000, so he only came up with $20,000. What was his return on investment?
Double.
No, exactly double. Yeah, 200%. You see the difference? By borrowing $180,000, because the bank doesn't share in the appreciation. He's the owner. He gets the appreciation. So he made $40,000, not on a $200,000 investment, on a $20,000 investment. And this is what was going on. These condos downtown in San Diego were selling before they were built. And you could buy one, put $30,000 down. 9 months later, 10 months later, when they were built, you could turn around and sell it for $40,000 more than what the purchase price was, even though you didn't come up with the whole amount. So you made $40,000 on $20,000, $30,000 investment. Me some too. Yes?
I think that's what they're doing in the investment. They have some apartments that you bought the condos and buy them before they're built, and after they're built, they're completely yours.
Yeah. How much do you have to put down?
I think around, I don't know.
10%? But that's for owner-occupied, right? These are people who are going to live there.
Either live there.
Well, this is a rental property. This is a rental property. So I don't know how they would pull that off. If it's not even built yet, you could say, oh, yeah, I'm going to live in there. Because if you lie, if you say, oh, I'm going to live in there, they'll let you have it, you know, for a lot less down. But this is not allowed anymore. Now they want you to put up 25%. What's 25% of $200,000? $50,000. So, and you can't even find that here in San Diego. But say you move, say you're out in Arizona somewhere, and there's a really nice house for 200 grand, which you can still find, right? And you're not living in it, you got to put up 50 grand. Do you see the difference? But I'm wondering how they know whether it's owner-occupied or not. You probably have to sign some affidavit that you're going to live there. Because if you don't, then they're going to foreclose immediately. They're going to kick you out of the house unless you refinance very quickly, come up with the cash to refinance. Because you lied, you committed fraud. But I think, I've never tried it. I think you only have to live in it 1 year, and then you can turn around and you only have to live in it 1 year. Depends on which state it is. Yeah, that's what I've heard. I don't know. I don't know enough about it because I'm not interested in living there. Maybe someday. My wife kicks me out. When? She always told me, when you retire, I'm getting a full-time job. Anyway, so is that cool? Don't you want to get involved? 20 grand down, year later, you walk away with 60 grand, right? Because you get your $20,000 back, plus 40 grand you made. It's like musical chairs. As long as the music is playing, as long as prices are going up, everybody happy, everybody going to be rich, we're all going to be there quick, they're running, giving away money quick. What happens if, listen, they didn't put this one in the book. I called it 666, just because it's a joke. You've heard of the number of the beast? Anybody know where it actually comes from? Where it comes, the number of the beast? The beast was Rome, and 666 was the number of days until the Roman Empire fell, and he was only 300 years off. Sorry, I hate when that happens. So here is, suppose Dave invested only $20,000 of his own money, borrowed $108,000, 10% down, 90% financing, and the property went down 20%. What's 20% of $200,000? 40. So instead of going up, the property is now worth $160,000. And remember, we saw properties go down 40 and 50%. And we saw the what happened to some properties. Now what's going to happen? What happened to his 20%? It's gone. He lost zero. He lost everything. He lost 100%. He has zero. And he has a property that he can only sell for $160,000. He still owes $180,000 on it. Is the bank going to let him sell it? If he comes up with the extra $20,000, yeah. So this is what happened. And it got worse. We saw it was even worse in the Great Recession, the great housing bubble, and then burst. Because now he has, if he gets in trouble, he's tempted to just walk away because he doesn't own, he's lost all his money. This is when people say, well, aren't you sad about losing all that money in the stock market? I say, yeah, I'm not happy about losing 40%. But these people lost everything. They lost 100% plus them. He can let it go through foreclosure, which is what a lot of people did. And while they were letting it foreclosure, they were still collecting the rent payments. Now, how would you like, you're a renter, you're paying your rent payments on time. You get a friendly little letter from the bank saying, we've foreclosed the property, it's now ours. Here's a check for $3,000, we want you out in three weeks, a month, we want you out. Please. We're asking you nicely. And if you cash a check, you have to leave. You promised to leave. That was part of the deal. They'll give you the check without you leaving. Now, what would you do? You find the landlord and break his kneecaps. Right? No? What would you do, Eric? He's saying, no. Beat him over the head. Stab him in the back. Cowards, that's the coward. I'm the coward.
Whatever you say.
Whatever I say, okay. No, but wouldn't you want to just destroy the guy or gal, whoever did that to you? Because they're not making the payments, but they're collecting the rent. Anything illegal about that? No, nothing illegal. Until you break their kneecaps. Then you've committed a crime. See, I told you we Italians, right? We know the difference between a friend and a good friend, did I tell you? Yeah? Yeah. Friend to help you move. A good friend to help you move a body. Okay. So, now, the big question is, what's he going to tell his wife? Dear, we have a problem. Honey, we have a problem. We now owe $20,000 more than the house is worth. Now, if he could have held on, kept making the payments, has the house come back? Yeah, maybe not to originally 200,000, but it's come back. Some of them are higher than they were, and we saw some are not even as high as they were back in 2007. But still, that's what leverage can do to you. It amplifies your gains and magnifies your losses, which is why real estate is tricky. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Let's go. I'm tired now. I'm tired about real estate. Are you scared now about real estate? Or disillusioned? Don't be, because it can be very profitable. You can put it in an IRA, but don't do it. Let's get rid of that. Okay. don't put it in an IRA. I know one person who's put a real estate property in an IRA. It worked out perfectly for him. But this guy's worth megabucks. He's worth a lot. Did you say that there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? I didn't say that because there's no capital gains taxes on the first $200,000, $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. That's on your principal residence. This is the place that you live, where you work, where you vote. And so there are people who are doing this. You can do it every 2 years. You buy a fixer-upper. They usually have another job, but they're good at fixing plumbing and drywalls and flooring, and they can fix up the house. After 2 years, they can sell it, if they're single, for $250,000 more than they paid for it and pay no taxes. Or if they're married, $500,000. That means they bought the place for $200,000. They can sell it for $700,000 and not pay a single dime in taxes. But it has to be your principal residence, and you have to be careful because this is a very well-celebrated case where a couple from Wisconsin, very wealthy, they had three residents, one in Wisconsin, one in Florida, and one in Arizona, and they moved around a lot. They sold one of them and said to the IRS, that's our principal residence, we don't owe any taxes. And the IRS said, sorry, wrong, you don't have any principal residence. Because they were voting in one place and had a driver's license in another place, and they lost. They lost in court. So there's a list of questions. Make sure it's your principal residence. Okay, let's get out of here. Now, when we started investing, weren't you excited about gold? Didn't you want to talk about gold? Gold. It's gold. Gold is a horrible investment, folks. Unless you believe the world is going to end. If you believe the world is going to end, get the hell out of the Northern Hemisphere. Get down to Tierra del Fuego, learn to raise goats, and speak Spanish. Because the gold ain't going to help you, even though it'll be worth a lot more than the dollars that you have in your pockets that aren't worth anything either. If here. I think Tom Petrino, he's retired now, but he's a great writer. If your reason for owning gold has something to do with the end of the world as we know it, shotguns and canned food probably be more practical investments. But this is what the survivalists, have you heard of the survivalists? They don't think it through. You're one of them? How many ammo? How much rounds of ammo do you have?
100.
100 rounds of ammo?
Yes.
There's 500,000 people coming.
Okay.
How many did you shoot?
At least five,
right. Five. And then there's another 495,950 who are coming after your food.
That's why I also have a car.
And you have a car.
Yeah.
There's no gas. Plus the roads are completely clogged. You can't get your car through unless you can go off the road. A bicycle would be a whole lot smarter to have.
Moped,
yeah, but now there's no more gas.
Again,
You have a 5-gallon tank. That'll get you down to San Felipe. Better than nothing, right? Live off of fish tacos. This is the problem that the survivalists don't understand, is that if the whole thing cracks and falls apart, you can have 4,000 rounds of ammunition. Sure, first of all, you're not going to kill 4,000 people. Maybe you're going to kill a few hundred, right? What do you do with the bodies? Now you have an environmental disaster on your hands. Do you realize what happens when a body starts rotting? Not, yeah, that's the least of your worries, the smell. And then you got another 500,000 or 150,000 people coming trying to steal your food. And when it comes to their kids, they'll do anything. They'll rip you apart to get the food for their kids. So failure is not an option, folks. I'm very optimistic. I think the next 20, if we, unless Pinchy Trump destroys everything, the next 20, 30 years should be the most prosperous years in the history of the world. But if you do believe, get out of the northern hemisphere, Tasmania. If you're lucky enough, go to Tahiti. They won't let you in. Would you buy gold coins? They're beautiful, gorgeous, bullion bars. They're expensive. What are you going to do with them? Where are they? Where are you going to put them? Don't put them in the safety deposit box in the bank. Because if there's a turmoil, you think you're going to be able to get inside the bank? No, they're going to have armed guards in front of the bank, and you can't touch that gold. Bury them in your backyard? Oh, well. Now, here are actually more legitimate. You can buy gold companies, gold corporations, gold stocks, companies that mine this stuff, and that may or may not be a good investment. Exchange-traded mutual funds that buy gold. How do you know it's really gold, not lead that's been painted gold? Silver, by the way, what is gold good for? Excellent, exactly. Gold is one of the best conductors of electricity. It's Dentists love it. There's other stuff you can use. But what else? Jewelry. That's it. If you're going to invest in something, a commodity, I would invest in oil. Oil is a lot more useful, or copper, but gold, what about silver? What's the biggest use of, now silver does have a whole lot more usage than gold. What was the biggest use of silver?
Cutlery.
Now that's used in cutlery and a lot of electronics. But in the past, it was used in film. Remember those little yellow, you don't remember them, the little yellow boxes that said Kodak on them? You don't remember. You do? Yeah, you steal them every once in a while? The Kodak's gone. Their name is still around, but the company's gone. It's now turned into something else. But that was the big use of silver, was film. Now, these three are actually, you might make, if you're a commodities trader, anybody know what these three are used for? Platinum, palladium, rhodium? Close, yeah. Catalytic converters. In your do you realize that catalytic converter in some of your cars is more expensive than the engine?
Oh, yeah,
it is. And they steal them. They go underneath, cut your catalytic converter, and run with them. And then and you can't get the darn thing smog without a catalytic converter. It's $2,000. This is what's inside those things. Yeah. So you're going to think the world's going to end? When people say they want to invest in gold, I show them this. Did I show you this already? 123 has seen it. Introduction to investments. Here's a dollar back in 1800. If you invested that dollar in stocks, you now have $22 million. That's how much the economy has exploded in the last 200 years since the Industrial Revolution. If you had bonds, you did okay. You know, 40 grand, 40,000%. That's not bad. Treasury bills, which are like savings accounts, 5,400. The consumer price index, a dollar today, a dollar then, is now worth $20. But look at what happened to gold. Gold has barely kept pace with inflation. Now, when does gold do well? What was going on in the 1860s? 1860s, you American history fans. Civil War, right. So gold spiked. 1930s, right. Great Depression, World War II. And then in the 70s, it started to levitate as inflation started to go up. But then in 1981, gold hit $800 an ounce. 1999, it was $250. So for 20 years, you just saw the price keep going down and down and down and down and down. And that you finally said, okay, I'm selling all this gold. And then it goes up to 1,200. So gold is one of the things where you're speculating. It has no intrinsic value other than the fact that somebody's going to buy it from you And so if you buy it at the right time and sell it at the right time, cool, buy low, sell high. But if the other way, plus if the world does end, doesn't matter. It ain't going to help you. Now, would you buy precious gems and stones and diamonds? They're going to know. Yeah, these are horrible investments. In fact, they are not investments. They are horrible. But there's a cool thing going on right now. There are companies that will take your ashes or the ashes of Fido or your fluffy kitty or Tia Maria. You send them the ashes and they send you back a diamond. No? You wouldn't do that? You don't want to have Fluffy on your finger? You don't believe me, do you? You believe? Not that I mean you. I'm not meant just you, but I'm going to show you. Okay. Diamonds from ashes. Okay. These are. By the way, you know how Google makes money, don't you? If you click right here, see this ad, Google gets the 50 cents or whatever. That's how they make a lot of money. But let's try here. Here it says Life Gem. They didn't have to pay them now, because I'm not going to do it. But here, created from here, Uncle Lucas was turned into a diamond. And how much does it cost? It's a whole lot cheaper than a real diamond. So carat, oh, that's expensive. $3,000 for 0.1 to 0.19 carat. That's expensive. I've seen lots cheaper. So that's ridiculous. These prices are outrageous. How do they make them? Well, yeah, exactly. Diamonds are made inside volcanoes by all the pressure and the heat. So they create a contraption. They create a machine that creates millions of pounds of pressure and heating up to, I forget, like 3,000 degrees, and the carbon turns into a diamond. Because you're made out of carbon, right?
It's a lab-made diamond.
Oh, yeah, it's a lab-made diamond. Yeah, it's not a naturally made. They take millions of years to create. Cool? So you want to buy that? No, I don't think so. Now, what about Beanie Babies and baseball cards? No. It may be a great hobby. And you may make a lot of money. But don't bet on it. There's art. You'll hear people say that art is the best investment. Sure, for a tiny little piece of art, tiny little piece of the market, for the very expensive art, sure, they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars. But the stuff you and I buy, it's nice to have. I bought something a million years ago. I forget, it was like $25. Now it's worth like $400. Oh, well. I don't know if I can actually get anybody to buy it from me. But you go on the website, it says that's how much it's worth. They won't buy it. That's how much they'll sell it to you. They might buy it from you for $100. So art's not an investment. Don't buy art. There's a guy who said he had $50,000 worth of Barbie dolls in a storage location in El Cajon. And then one weekend, somebody just walked away from them. Plus, would you want something on your, especially if you're kids, they could throw something on your wall? I almost bought a John Lennon. I didn't do it. I'm glad I didn't do it because it didn't go up and went down. If I had bought his guitar, I would have been filthy rich. But John Lennon was also an artist. You've heard of John Lennon? You've heard of the Beatles, right? Haven't you guys? Oh, good, good, good. And when he died, they sold a lot of his art. And I thought, maybe yes. It was a pretty cool piece, but I didn't buy it. And I'm glad I didn't because we had kids and they throw ketchup and donuts and stuff at it. So the maximum capital gains taxes on most all financial and real estate investments is currently 15%. For most people, if you're very wealthy, it's 20%. On precious metals, art, collectibles, it's 28%. Plus, you can't put it in your IRA. You think the Congress is trying to tell you something? Stick with the real estate and financial investments. Now, this is a little timely. Actually, it's time is gone, I think. Anybody still into Bitcoin? Other cryptocurrencies? Okay, well, I didn't even know my son was doing it until he asked me to help him with his taxes. But when people say, what about Bitcoin? Let's get involved with Bitcoin. Well, it's like gold. It's pure speculation. You have to buy low, sell high. Plus, you know there's all kinds of hanky-panky going on. All kinds of manipulation in the Bitcoin markets and the cryptocurrencies. The technology behind cryptocurrencies, you ever heard of blockchain? The digital ledger? That's going to survive. The technology that allows multiple individuals, multiple entities, to watch what's going on. Yes?
I think now Bitcoin is still risky, but it actually made a currency. Like, you have your back from debit cards.
Yeah?
You can just put currency.
Yeah, and what's it worth?
I don't know. Not right now.
And did you hear my Bitcoin joke? I didn't think I told you. I don't know if you catch it. See if you catch it. The father, son goes up to the father, Dad, can I have $10 of Bitcoin? And the father says, $12 of Bitcoin? What do you need $9 of Bitcoin for? You get the joke? Okay. Stephen Colbert is an artist, right? He's a comedian. But he said it perfectly. It's gold for nerds. Okay, it's like gold. It's not really worth anything except what other people pay for it. There's no practical usage for it. But people, because someone will pay for it, there's some worth to it. But it's even more volatile, and there's a whole lot more hanky-panky going on. Come on, Payano, what you got against Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies? You're just old, that's all. Well, that's true. And this is the future. We're all going to get rich. But you don't hear this as much, do you, anymore? A year ago in January, oh my God, quick, it's going up to 19,000, quick. No, not 5. What is it down to? About 3,000? 6,000 down? But see, that was an hour ago. Now it's 5. Tomorrow it'll be 7. Okay, so here's the rebuttal. And if it makes any sense to you, this is from somebody who's been investing, and I look at it from a investment point of view through the lens of our Business 123 Introduction to Investments. You all waking up? Okay, it's almost over. First of all, as mentioned, you cannot invest in a cryptocurrency. You can only speculate. The value is worth only what others believe it is worth. There's nothing behind the Bitcoin. There's no rent. There's no dividends. There's no interest. They're not making any new products. They're not going out to new markets. I just said that. In other words, there's no cash flow. And more importantly, there's nothing backing up the currency. And what about the fiat currencies, huh? What do they mean by that? Our dollar is what's called a fiat currency. It means our dollar is created by the Federal Reserve Board. Every other currency in the world is a fiat currency. No currencies are backed by any precious metal or oil or whatever anymore. That's how you might say that, you know, Venezuela has fallen apart. Aren't they all the same? The dollar is only worth something because we believe it is worth something. That's not true, folks. That is not true. You will hear people say that our dollars and other fiat currencies, fiat means that, you know, from created, are not backed by gold and are therefore worthless. Have you heard people say that? It's worthless. It's not backed by gold. And what I say is poppycock. Because first of all, what is gold worth? What is it worth? Well, so somebody, it's speculation, right? Our dollars are backed by our economy, the great American economic machine. Our dollars are backed by what the U.S. can produce and consume, our gross domestic product. When someone says your dollars are worthless, I say, walk into any grocery store, look around, and you tell me that dollar is worthless, okay? People come to this, not so much anymore because the rest of the world is catching up, but they come to this country, they walk into a Vons, they go, where did all this stuff come from? Can I buy it? Yeah, you can buy it with that dollar in your hand. So, or I'll say to them, you think dollars are worthless? Here's a bag, go to your bank, take all the dollars, put it in there, I'll take it away from you. I'll take it off your hands. You don't want anything worthless. The job of the Federal Reserve Bank is to make sure that there are enough dollars in circulation to match the production of our economy with the consumption of our economy. Too many dollars, you get inflation. If there's too many dollars chasing too few goods, you get inflation. If you don't have enough dollars, then economic output is stifled. Opportunities for growth of our wealth are lost. So it's not an easy job. I love it when people scream, end the Fed, get rid of the Federal Reserve Bank. What are you going to replace it with? Gold. You going to do a better job? So how does this relate to cryptocurrency? And how do you explain the success of Bitcoin? There is absolutely nothing to stay to stop other individuals or groups from starting their own cryptocurrencies. And isn't this what happened a year and a half ago? Everybody started coming out with cryptocurrencies. There was one called the Jesus coin. You don't believe me, do you? Look it up, JesusCoin.com. They've changed now. I don't think they're a cryptocurrency anymore, but they were. And they were saying, it's not a godless cryptocurrency. This one is backed by Jesus. And you have a hard time believing whether it was a joke or whether these people were really believing their own. So check it out. Eventually, the bottom not will fall out. I think the bottom has fallen out. There's a few cryptocurrencies that will survive, just like there's gold that's going to survive. But most, at one point, there were 2,000 of them, right? 2,000 cryptocurrencies. The most profitable investment anyone can make is starting a business, the ultimate investment. But it's also one of the most riskiest, folks. It's not for everybody. Have you heard the statistics? 50% of businesses fail in the first year. 80% of the businesses fail in the first 5 years. 100% of businesses fail in the first 10,000 years. These are bogus claims. They are absolutely bogus. We do know that businesses fail on a regular rate. You see that, don't you? Especially restaurants. Right? One guy, he's actually very successful, but he named one of his businesses Cafe 11. And later on, I found out he named that because he expected to go through Chapter 11, which is bankruptcy. He didn't. He sold it, and then they went through bankruptcy. The truth is no one knows, not even the IRS, because no one knows how many businesses there are. Many small businesses operate just out of people's pockets. You know, they take money coming in, pull money coming out. They don't ever report it or anything, and the IRS doesn't know. So you may be that person. And the cool thing about being a business person is that you're going to fail 2, 3, 4 times until you succeed. And the people will tell you, I had to fail. I just had to do it. There's no way I was going to work for somebody else. I had to be my own boss. But there are not that many of them. I'm not one of them. I mean, I have a little business on the side, but it's not nothing. Nothing like having a real business. Anybody? Anybody interested? Do it while you're young. Before you have the wife or the husband and the kid and the orthodontia and the quinceañera, do it early. Fail early. Fail often. And then succeed. And the cool thing is, we are here to help you. Believe it or not, there are entire entities out there to help you succeed. By far, the best one is the South. But SCORE is cool. SCORE is cool. It used to be called the Service Corps of Retired Executives. Now they just call them SCORE. You go to their seminars. Some of them are free. Some of them are paid. And if you're there, the first one, they're going to say, you're going to fail. Who do you think you are? All these businesses fail. You're stupid. Don't you dare do this. And so people get up and walk out. And the people who are left, they say, okay, let's get started. They're going to try to scare you first because they know what you're going to go through. They've been through it. But they will help you. Kiva, not so much. This guy, I think they left San Diego. I think they're now in L.A. But it used to be Axion San Diego. It still takes you to Axion, but it now takes you to the L.A. chapter. So I think they've gone. And I haven't seen them in a long time. But this Southwestern College at our National City campus hosts the Small Business Development Center. These people are awesome. Go see them. Some of the seminars are free. Some of them are for pay. And you might even see me there, because I go there too. Cool? Now, how about a scam? You think there's investment scams? Oh, yeah, there are tons of them, folks. If it sounds too good to be true, start your real estate empire with no money down. You too can take advantage of the tremendous opportunities now in the wide open real estate foreclosure market. Just take our guaranteed surefire 3-day real estate investment seminar for only $2,995 that will pay for itself in just 1 month. And don't worry about burning your credit card, because you're going to pay that credit card off and all the other credit cards in just 2 or 3 months. And when that doesn't work, we will then send you to the $9,995 2-week seminar, which is absolutely fabulous, and we guarantee, after we mortgage your house, that you will pay all your debts. You think I can make a lot of money if I didn't have any ethics?
You sound like a YouTube guy.
Yeah, that's what they sound like. And the thing is, you'd think most people would go, you're a liar. They buy it. I mean, not everybody, right? But they buy it. That's how Trump got in. Tell the biggest lie. Yeah. Okay, so bottom lines on alternative investments. Buy a house, make it your home. It should reward you well over the long term, both personally and professionally and financially. Learn the ropes regarding a landlord. Think about it, folks. Work for a property management company, escrow company. Stay away from precious metals, gems, art, collectibles, forget it, and cryptocurrencies. And then think. Think about what you would want to do. Find a plan, find a need, and fill it. Because that's how small businesses become large businesses. People got an idea, they become fabulously wealthy. But for every Facebook, you've heard of MySpace book? You know what's it called? And then K-Pasta. Did you ever see K-Pasta? It was another social media. Didn't do very well. And then what was another one? I forget. For everyone, Google, there was Yahoo, and then Dogpile, Ask Jeeves, Go Broke. Okay, so, cool? Now, that's our discussion. Now, I got a couple of things, other things that we could do, but what I hope you'll do is, if you haven't done your Baffle the Broker, please do that. And then I have a couple of things that I can show you. Those of you who want to stick around, I have a spreadsheet that I use when we have a realtor. For a while, I didn't use a realtor because I don't trust them. This guy you can trust. He is honest. He's like the flying panda. You know, flying pandas don't usually exist, but maybe you find one and you stick with him. And he sends me properties via email, and then I have a spreadsheet that I use to see if this thing actually makes any sense at all to invest in. So if you want to stick around, I can show you that. If you want to do that, otherwise, we're done. Real estate and other investment alternatives. On Thursday, we will start retirement planning. Next Tuesday, estate planning. And then the last day will be Baffle the Broker. Yes. Do number one again. Start over again. Yeah. Okay. All right. Those of you who want to leave, please leave in 37 seconds. Okay. Just get up and leave. And we're going to go over the problems again. Remember, these problems will not be on the exam. So what is that? That's okay. Who snuck in late? Okay, so Nicole, Noah, Francisco, Marco, Carlos, Margamo, Sarah, David Ruiz, Sarah, what? I got you. No, I got you. Oh, we're talking about a different one. Yeah, I got you, Arturo. Okay, thank you. Okay, so, all right, if you're leaving, leave quickly. Okay, so now let's take a look at the three problems again. The first problem, so I'm going to erase what we have there. We'll start over again. This is the reason that the book did this is because it was going on right at that time. The housing markets, housing was going up. The housing usually goes up about 5%, 7%, but not in San Diego. And New York was doing these things. The left and the right coast, on the coast, the prices were just levitating. In Washington, Boston, and some extent it happened in Las Vegas. It also happened in Stockton, and of course along the coast, somewhat up in Washington, Seattle. So here's a house for $200,000. He's able to buy it in cash. Is that how we normally buy real estate? No, we normally borrow money because how many people have $200,000 cash laying around? So, but let's say he had it. He had $200,000, so he puts it down and he buys the house free and clear. And then in 1 year, it goes up to $240,000. Well, how do we compute the absolute dollar return and the percentage return? Well, the absolute dollar return is easy. How much did we receive? How much did we pay? We made 40 grand in absolute dollars. Now, to calculate the percentage return, which allows us to compare it to stocks and bonds and savings accounts and other investments, even though they're totally different investments, we still can look at the percentage return. We take the 40,000 that we made, and we divide it by how much we brought to the table. That's what you'll hear people say. Well, how much did you bring to the table? In other words, how much did you pay? He paid $200,000. So take your calculator and do 40,000 divided by 200,000, and you should get 0.20, which stands for 20%. Make sense? Pretty darn good. If you get 20%, oh my goodness. But that's not how you normally buy real estate. During the great run-up in the housing market, they were allowing people to put 10% down for an investment property. It's not allowed anymore. You got to come up with 25% down. They used to make people put at least 20%, but then they said, let's relax those. So he puts up $20,000, scrounges it up. Who knows how he gets it? And the bank then lends him 180 grand. Because they do an appraisal and they say, yeah, the house is worth 200. That's what other people are paying. So, yeah, it's worth 200,000. So now the bank has lent him 180 grand. But they don't share in the appreciation. This is why shared appreciation can be very cool for investors. They don't share it. All they want is their 180 grand back. They want their interest and they want their 180,000 back. So the house goes up 240,000. The absolute dollar return is the same. But in this case, we only came to the table with $20,000. We only had an initial investment of 20 grand. Make sense? Well, now you do the calculation. 40 divided by 20, 2.0, which means 200%. This person made 200% on their money. And this is what was going on. And this is why people were jumping in, feet forward, because prices kept going up. Yes? Well, yeah, it was the, and what were they doing with these loans? They were packaging these loans into big pools of mortgages, turning them into bonds, and selling them all around the world. And what?
Just for
making
more money?
Yeah! Yeah! Well, it's not stupid if the house really is worth that. But what was going on? But see, that's the problem. What's it worth? You, and this is why, see, my buddy and I both saw this, but he saw it a lot better than I did. I was kind of blinded. But you saw people taking out $500,000 loans to buy a place that 3 years ago was $250,000, or whatever, 4 years ago. In the year 2000, it was $250,000 here in East Chula Vista. Now it's selling for $500,000. Places out in Eastlake and by the golf course, they were selling for $350,000 in the year 2000. By 2007, they were selling for $1 million. We saw the one, right? We saw the one was selling for over $1 million. And we both knew, I was sure of it, he was sure of it, but he was more aggressive than I was. We both know it's going to hurt, it's going to end. And you had people who had no business taking out a $500,000 loan because they had, $30,000, $35,000 of income, which is not a horrible income, but you shouldn't be able to afford a $500,000 loan. Well, how could they do it? Well, because the first year, they were only making payments of $1,600, which they could afford. But that was because the loan was not going down, it was going up. They had a negative amortization, which is a fancy way of saying, you ain't paying off the loan is getting bigger. What do you care? 3 years from now, it's going to be worth $800,000. What are you worried about? Or we'll do it again. This is what the brokers were telling the people. And this is why people like me were jumping up and down, like, hey, academic, he's a professor, what do you care? Fuddy-duddy. That's what they were saying. They were saying you're stifling financial innovation. So the first year you paid $1,600, Second year you paid $2,300. Okay, well, okay. The third year you paid, you know, whatever, $3,000 or $20, maybe not that high. Maybe it went to $2,000, $2,600. And then the fourth year it resets, whatever the hell that means. Means now you have to start paying the thing down, is what it means. It has to become amortized. And so now you're looking at payments of $3,300, which is what they should have been at the beginning of it. They should have been that much, but that's, you know, the guy's only making $35,000. He can't make those payments. So what did they do? They just sat there. It took them 2-3 years to get him out of it.
Yeah.
Because the banks had hundreds of thousands of these things. And that's, you know, that's, we fooled ourselves. But we're going to do it again. It's capitalism. You know, we have these waves of booms and then a wave of busts. And we're humans. What can we say? Wouldn't it be nice if we were logical and rational and only did things? But you see, some other countries were okay, where is it? Okay. That's that guy. Some other, Canada was looking down at the United States and saying, this is not going to end well. And they were right. But they weren't the only ones. Some of the countries in Europe were saying, this is not going to end well. But others like Spain, Iceland, Ireland, and in the south of England, they were doing it. In London, prices were levitating. And they got hit hard too. But other countries like Germany, no. We're not going to do this. And they survived. But the whole thing almost took the whole world economy down. And then this is what happens if the price goes down. The price goes down because you leverage, because you borrowed money, you lose your entire outlay, you lose everything. And now you owe, you know, the thing is worth $160,000. So you go to the bank and say, look, I got a buyer for $160,000. Will you take a short sale? That's what's called a short sale. And the bank says, oh, all right. It's better than nothing, better than just having to kick you through foreclosure. And during normal times, you would be getting a 1099 for $20,000, forgive loan, and you have to pay taxes on that. Because the IRS says, that's a forgive loan, that's income, you have to pay taxes on it. But during the Great Recession, the Congress said, okay, not now. So by 2013, they took that exemption away. It was only for housing. It wasn't, if you had a credit card and they forgave, you know, half the credit card, you still got a 1099. Cool? So you stuck here. Thank you very much. Will you show you something I think is the best investment in the future? Everything is about the United States now, folks. And it's not going to last. Other than the United States has gone down the tubes. But it's just that we've been living high off the hog forever, as they say. We're gonna get hit hard. I don't know how hard, we'll see. But the best thing, folks, is the developing world. I think the best is the developing world. So here's a camel rider with cell phones. Hey, where is he? There he is. Oh, that's his businessman. I don't want a businessman. I want a guy with it. So here's a guy. Can you see it? No, you can't see it. Okay. So here's a camel right here. And what's he doing? He's talking on his cell phone. I don't know if that's the best one. There's another one I really liked. I can't see it. Yeah, here's one. Yeah. And then, how about, I forget. Oh, my goodness. I'm getting old. I am old. It's too late. Hut with satellite. How do you spell satellite? Dish. There it is. And they got Disney. This is what's going on. The developing world is leapfrogging the technology. They're not even bothering with landlines. Forget it. They don't need them, right? They don't need them. So they are leapfrogging into the modern world. And this is very cool. Because wouldn't these people like to have a better life? Right? And wouldn't we like to sell them toothpaste? You know, anybody have kids in here? Kids? No. But one of the hardest things to do is get your kids to brush their teeth, right? Well, Crest and Colgate and Unilever, they're trying to get people in India to brush their teeth for the first time. Because they didn't, you know, by the age 30, most of their teeth have fallen out. So now, see, this is very cool. I think. And so, if we don't blow ourselves up, die in our own waste, Ebola, meteorite, tsunami, disco, we survive the next 20, 30 years, I'm not prepared to be dead by then, but I'm very optimistic that it's going to be a better world. Because, you know, we used to say to the rest of the world, why can't you be more like us? Now we're saying, why are you trying to be more like us? It's not fair. We want to be the only prosperous country around. You don't understand. We're going to sell you Nike. We're going to sell you Disney. We're going to sell you Hot Dogs, McDonald's, and Jack Daniels. And I think so. Anyway, thank you so much. And see you on Thursday.